Hi, this is Jack Tester, and welcome to another episode of Leadership Lounge. I am still kind of working from home. I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm the only one in the office, though. So I did come to the office today, beautiful day in May. And I have the good pleasure of talking to Bob Hanifin from Beacon Electric in, is it Virginia or Maryland, Bob?
It's Manassas, Virginia, Jack, and thanks for having me today.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and you're a big NextStar junkie. We see at a lot of events. You're very engaged with our coaches. You always send me nice notes, and you sent me a nice note the other day, and you had an idea for the topic on Leadership Lounge. And of course, you know, when you basically, I thought you were volunteering, Bob. So I said, "Hey, but we do a Leadership Lounge." I think it caught you off guard, but here we are, right? So we'll talk about that. So thanks for doing this, Bob.
Sure. I will tell you, I definitely was not volunteering, but I was pretty surprised to get your email. So thank you.
Well, let's do this, Bob. So just so people know, we know now you've got an electrical service company in Manassas, Virginia. Just give us an idea what the business looks like today, and then we're going to backtrack and we're going to get to the important question you asked. So tell us about your business today.
So we currently have 16 employees. We are strictly electrical technicians. Been in business for about 14 years and joined NextStar in 2006.
Wow, that long ago. Jeepers. Yeah. You don't look that old, Bob.
Well, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. So let's start. You're in the electrical business. And before we started this, you said, you know, that so often people are in the trade because their father was or their uncle was, and then they just go right from high school and they're running around the shop with a bucket full of parts, in your case circuits and fuses and all that, and then you get right into the industry. Is that how it worked for you, Bob?
No, not at all. I actually was struggling in high school, actually, and my brother had told me to, you know, look at the trades, and he encouraged me to, you know, pursue electrical, which I did. And so I actually, after high school, went to Delhi Ag and Tech in Delhi, New York. I graduated there in 1983. It was a 2-year program. We did lab in the morning and theory in the afternoon. We had really good instructors. And then, so I graduated in 83, and then I moved to Manassas the following year. And then from there, I worked for an electrical contractor in Manassas doing commercial installations as a assistant, you know, a helper, apprentice.
Yeah.
And the company I worked for, you know, I was basically known as the damn Yankee. I just was not treated with any respect at all. There was no training or anything. It was just a yeller and a screamer, quite frankly.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my experience while I was working there.
Got it.
And then...
Go ahead.
So what I was going to say, so my brother, you know, we're pretty close, and he worked in the defense industry. I really wasn't happy there. I liked the work. I did enjoy the work. I was getting pretty good at it. And at the time, he knew some program manager that worked in the defense industry that was looking for somebody to kind of start off as like an analyst. And I ended up working for a company in the defense industry called Analytical Services Corporation. And my job there was, back then the computers weren't very good. So my job was as a coder. So I basically looked at engineering drawings, and they had these like balloon call outs with numbers on them, and I identified the numbers and I put them on these sheets, and then the sheets went to another department where they entered all that in, and then they made tech manuals out of them. So they were basically just identifying all the parts for these weapon systems. So again, I worked there for about 15 years. They were located in Arlington, Virginia. And then I stayed there for about 15 years. I ended up working in the Pentagon, working for an organization called SAFAQ. That's Secretary of the Air Force for Acquisition and Common Weapons System Division. That's where I worked. And a lot of the work that I did there was programmatic. So we worked on point papers, quad charts, and presentations. My role was to support Air Force action officers, so majors, lieutenant colonels, and their job was to just brief the higher ups on their programs. And a quad chart, I don't know if you're familiar with a quad chart, but it's just a chart with four quadrants. And so it's cost, schedule, performance, issues. And they briefed it at a high level. I was the only person on this contract of 400 people that did not have at least a bachelor's degree. I had a 2 years associate degree. And the only way to really kind of get ahead when you're working on defense contracts, a lot of their proposals are based upon your education. So a good friend of mine ended up leaving there and going to MCI Communication. And so he ended up getting me a job at MCI Communication, because the reason I left there, I really enjoyed working in the Pentagon. There was a lot of camaraderie. It was well organized, very highly educated people, a lot of training. And so I did enjoy that. We actually would go running a lot at our lunch breaks up to the Capitol, and then go back to the Pentagon, and then go right back to work. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jack.
Well, I was going to say, I guess I kind of knew that you had. I kind of thought it was more of a corporate background, but I didn't know you worked for the military-industrial complex here. How did you come to start an electrical company or get to Beacon? Tell me, jump to that. I that's fascinating.
So just a little bit more. So MCI Communications was bought out by WorldCom. WorldCom was a large organization. I don't know how familiar you are, but they had like 20,000 employees.
They went out of business, didn't they?
They went bankrupt. They were mismanaged by the CEO, Bernard Evers. And he ended up going to prison. When I was at WorldCom, I foolishly took all of my retirement. At the time, telecom was going through the roof. And at the time, I did transfer all my retirement for all the years I was working, really, to telecom, specifically WorldCom. Sending out emails about how great we were doing and everything. And then really, very quickly, it just tanked. It just tanked. And so I ended up losing all my retirement. And so that was in 2006. And so I started looking for another job. And my brother, again, he said, Bob, why don't you try to start an electrical contracting business? And I said to him, I go, there is absolutely no way that I could do that. I did not feel I was up to that task at all. And what he did was he put an ad in the local newspaper with my cell phone on it. It didn't tell me about it. And, offering electrical services. And he told me, after it was posted, and he used my cell phone, and I did get some calls. And I got a call for a basement job. And I put a bid in. I got the job. And it really, honestly, it was so well paying for me, that one job. I thought to myself, I can do this. And based on that is how I got started in the electrical field. Now, prior up to that, I was still doing electrical here and there, just not full time. So that's kind of how I got started. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's an interesting journey. And, it's interesting. Your journey now is, if I'd asked somebody this question 28 years ago about how you got in the electrical profession, someone coming out of a corporate environment would not have been the way they got into business. But I guess the beginning part of your career was pretty typical. We didn't like high school, kind of figured out better working with your hands. Then the transition there was interesting. So here you are. You're running a business, and you've been at it for a number of years now. You've been at it for 14 years. And in that time, you basically starting it from zero to a nice business today. Congratulations, right. By the way, Bob. Well done. And I'd like to ask the question that you asked me, which was, Jack, it sure would be interesting if we had some people focus on some of the really challenging moments they had in business and what they learned from those challenges today as they reflect back. You know, and the reason that's such a great question is that we don't learn much during the salad days of our life, when money's flowing and life is good and we're kind of bulletproof and we're confident and we're made some decisions and we fortuitously found ourselves in the right spot. You know, there's so many people that you know, made an investment in Microsoft years ago, and all of a sudden it just turned out to be great, and they just kind of got, for lack of a better word, lucky. So we don't want to talk about that because you don't learn much then. You learn from the challenges. So 14 years looking back, Bob, tell us about a year, give us the year, and give us the challenge, and let's talk about what you learned. So let's start, what year was it?
So this year would have been, looks like 2014.
Okay. 14. 8 years into business. 8 years into business now. Okay. Yeah.
And I just finished wiring up a 26-unit apartment building in Washington, D.C. There was a tremendous amount of design work that I did. And, you know, I gave it to the architects, but I did all the legwork, you know. So I finished that job. I was having a hard time with the contractor getting paid. And one of the reasons why I started working for this contractor was really just the promise of more work. That's the main reason.
Yeah.
We got to the point where he owed me about $40,000. We were 90 days into it. There was another project that was getting ready to get started, or it had started. It was the Salvation Army. So I was now I'm wiring up the Salvation Army. And everything was going good there. The vendors, they were really getting after me. And his name was Rick. And so I said to Rick, I've got to get paid. I got to get paid for that DC job. And he said to me, why don't you finish this effing job first? And I remember consciously, now, not only were the vendors really after me, but my daughter's wedding was in 2 weeks, and I literally needed about 20 of that for the final payment for the wedding.
Okay. Yeah, and you sent out invitations now. Everybody's coming,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. All the invitations were sent. And I was really feeling stressed, very stressed, you know, trying to get this Salvation Army job done and getting paid and then paying my vendors. And then him saying that to me. Now, he's probably 6'2". His partner was there. He's probably 6'4". And I remember consciously saying to myself, and I'm not a violent person at all, but I remember saying to myself, consciously saying, I'm going to jail today. And then I went.
You're going to what? You're going to what?
I'm going to jail today.
Oh, you're going to go to jail today. Oh, geez. Okay.
Yes, that's what I remember saying to myself. Now, I didn't do anything to cause myself to go to jail, but I was having those thoughts.
Okay.
The one thing I did do, though, Jack, was I lost all emotional intelligence, and I just became enraged. And, you know, I let him know I was enraged. And I was aware that this project had some code issues that he was trying to get away with for structural stuff that we didn't have anything to do with that. But I knew about those, and I threatened him and told him if he didn't get me paid that day, that I was going to turn him into code enforcement. And so I did get the check that evening for $40,000. I went to go cash it the next day, and the check bounced. And so he did. I did get the check. Like the following day, and everything was fine. But I just remember after that, I was like, and I might have given you the wrong year. I'm trying to go back here. This was back when about a year before I started with Nexstar. But I just remember that. Well, I just remember saying, I've got to get into a different line. I like electrical work. I just don't like the customers that I'm dealing with, which was the general contractors, the builders, that just over time, all those relationships, no matter how hard I tried to be upfront, you know, about my expectations, what I was going to charge, they just slowly always dwindled, and they always dwindled as a result of either being screwed over or just jerking you around. So you know, that put me on a course of searching to try to get out of that, you know, that field of relying on them. And so time I was a board member of CASA, which is for abused and neglected children, and one of the board members told me about a plumbing networking event that I should go to, because at the time I was also installing generators, and he knew I was looking for somebody for our gas installs. And so I went to this one, and I actually ran into Wendell Presgrave from My Plumber.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And he's just a kind, very, very kind man. And I really hit it off with him. And we got to talking. I didn't know who he was. I had no idea who he was. No idea how successful his company was. But until I started talking to some other people while I was at this networking event. They were like, "Could you know who you're sitting next to?" So that's kind of how I knew about that. And then, so I went up to him and I asked him, "What has, you know, Wendell, if you don't mind my asking, what's kind of made you so successful? Because I've been struggling." And he said, "Well, you probably won't be able to join, but it's this network called Nexstar." And so, you know, long story short, he gave me all the information, and I went in ahead and got signed up and everything.
Yeah. But
I can't remember the sales rep at the time. I think his name was Scott. But anyways, he called me back and he said, "Bob, unfortunately you can't, because that territory is not available." And so that was over, and I was really excited about it. But then he called me back probably, like, I'm going to say about 6 weeks later. He said, "Bob," "I thought you lived in, you know, Manassas." I go, "Yeah, I live in Manassas." He goes, "Well, what's this other address?" I says, "Well, that's where my office is, but, you know, my home address, it's right in Manassas." He goes, "Well, because your office address, we can get you in, but I just couldn't get you in with the other one." So as a result of that, I was able to get into Nexstar, and that was the result of a salesperson that was being just showing due diligence on his part. Good for him. I thought his name was Scott. I just don't remember.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. So that's how you decided to get in the service replacement, through that story, right?
Yeah, that's how I got in. That's how I got into Nexstar. That's what really changed the trajectory of how I was able to operate and grow from there.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, that's good to hear. So give me another year, Bob. Give me another year. What else? These moments in business where you really went through a patch, and I get it. I can see the emotion that not getting paid, having your daughter's wedding to pay for, and having that be a catalyst to reflect on just what you were doing in your business, and that changed the direction of your company. You changed is you got so mad you thought you were going to hurt somebody, right? That's where you got in your head.
So it was that and being taken advantage of. And
Right.
Yeah.
I get it. So what else? Give me another example.
So the one when I asked the question of you that, you know, I really wanted to share, because, you know, it's such an important story about finding the right person for the right seat, which I've struggled with even after joining Nexstar. And I've done that through really hard lessons, you know, and having to look back at yourself. But let me share the story. It literally took me 3 attempts to finally get a service manager that was in line with our core values. The first one was an old friend that I had known for over 20 years. And, you know, as the old adage goes, an old friend makes a great service manager. No.
There's no old adage like that. I've never heard that adage.
I made that up, but you know, that's not true. But our first service manager, my old friend, he really didn't get the job. He was a very successful sales guy. And I thought, you know, I thought he could come in and I'd take him to Nexstar trainings. I'd work alongside him, and that he would be able to train our techs and get them to perform, you know, at a high level. But really, he really just wanted to sit around and kind of act like he was working at IBM for IBM Corporation. He didn't really want to hold anybody accountable, and he certainly didn't want to listen to ideas. My wife didn't particularly like him. The CSRs didn't like him. I took him to Leadership Spotlight in 2017, and I knew he had an interaction with Scott Pearson. So I called Scott and I asked him what he thought. And of course, Scott was very honest with me and shared exactly how he felt. And he said, Scott told me he remembered walking into a room where all the NextStar coaches were after the training, you know, talking. And he heard one of the coaches say, "Who's that guy from Beacon?" And then so, you know, so that's the first thing he heard about him. And of course, we talked about some of his interactions. So my service manager was basically dominating the tables, not listening to anybody. That's what was going on there. But I needed to hear that, Jack. And, you know, as a result,
did you believe it? Did you believe it, or did you be in denial for a while, Bob?
No, I was definitely in denial for a while. I was trying my best to make it work. You know, I was in denial. This went on for 10 months.
Oh boy.
You know, it went on for 10 months, which isn't that long, but it was too long. Okay. Because during that time frame, you know, he was hurting our culture. He was draining my energy. That was my hard lesson there. So, and I guess the reason that I chose him, again, it was the, he was real charismatic. You know, he's very, you know, he's a good talker. But he definitely wasn't humble. And at the time, I really kind of thought leadership, that was a big part of leadership, where I've learned since that it has nothing to do with it. How charismatic you are, that's the least of it. But I didn't realize that at the time. So I'm sorry, Jack, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that you're not alone in that. You know, I've often said that if you've got the ability to speak in front of a room, you're given way too much credit for your abilities outside of the front of the room. And that's, you know, and it's true. So you're not alone there, right? We all fall into that. And we all overestimate that, you know, but in a service business, it's day-to-day leadership. You know, the front of the room charismatic stuff is 2% of your time. And if they're dysfunctional with the 98% or not effective with the 98%, dysfunctional is a strong word, but, you know, they can't be an effective operational leader. Maybe a good public speaker was very different than being a good operational leader in a business. So you're not alone there, Bob. I've sensed that. I've seen that. I get it. But it's good to learn that, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And
yeah.
I learned a lot there about, you know, really trying to get the right person for the right seat. But Jack, I still wasn't there yet. I mean, I learned a lot, but I still wasn't there yet.
So you had another hot burner to touch here, it sounds like. Another burner you needed to touch. Go ahead. All right.
The lesson wasn't completely learned. So the next service manager was even closer to home. This wasn't an old friend. This was actually my son-in-law. This was my son-in-law. Now I chose him. I had a previous business coach, non-NextStar, that referred him and recommended him, and I really valued his opinion. So that really influenced my decision. But I didn't take the time. He was my new son-in-law. I knew him for about a year, and you know, so I didn't know him well enough. Certainly not to bring him into the business. One of the things that influenced my decision, I knew that he was a leader within the AA community. He had a lot of sponsors. And, you know, I don't know if you know anything about AA, but the 12 steps, there's a lot of commonality with the 12 steps in business, really, quite frankly. And so with that information, I felt that he would be a good fit. But we communicated well in the beginning, basically until we didn't. it didn't take long for a lot of indicators to come up very early on that I knew, Jack, this was not going to work. I just knew it. And there was a lot of a lot of selfishness that was going on. He was, one of our core values is professionalism, and he was acting unprofessional. I did, you know, going into it, knew that, you know, with all the family dynamics, you know, mixing business with family, I made sure I had a working agreement that I spent a significant amount of time on with him, where we identified his boundaries, my boundaries, what my expectations were, and I was going to coach, and those were our agreements. That's what I was going to coach against, basically our agreements. And I thought with that information that would be okay, but it didn't work out that way at all. And it was, to be honest, it was very painful to make that decision, but I didn't make that. That was another one that took about 8 months. And what I learned on that was, as painful it was to let him go, because it did affect the relationship with my daughter a little bit. We're mending it, but it did affect it, is how important it is to just make that decision. I wasn't courageous enough to make the decision earlier.
That's a tough one.
Versus later. Courageous
decision might not have been to not bring him in the business in the first place, just because of the risk, I suppose. But that's such a risk when you don't have to. You're not born into it. You know, it's now you're willfully and consciously bringing a family member in. You know, unless there was some kind of back pressure to do that, Bob? Or did you just say, no, this is an easy choice. He's in front of me, and I, you know, this would be nice.
I mean, the only back pressure was I knew we needed another service manager. I guess I didn't put, the other part was I just didn't put the time in to consciously look at others. That was, yeah. It was more convenient. I would say it was more
kind of a convenient hire. Yeah, we do that so often in leadership, don't we? You know? What's the easy choice and rather than the right choice, or being slightly more deliberate with it? I get it. So you just jumped at it, right? Is that desperation?
I wouldn't say it was in desperation. I just feel that I didn't do my due diligence, and
yeah.
I still needed to go through a little more pain to realize the importance of aligning each position with your core values.
Got it.
So that's ingrained in me now. In fact, all of our questions, we're in the process now of aligning those questions so that we can identify that whoever we hire is going to be in alignment with our core values.
You've been talking about these. What are, just real quick, what are your core values, Bob? Just curious.
So it's community. It's being respectful, positive, and safe around others, driving safely. Working safely in people's homes.
Safety. Okay.
For safety. And then respecting the differences in others as well. That's part of our community. Okay. And then professionalism would be always being prepared, punctual, and honest. Mm-hmm. Listening with the intent to understand. And then the other one is gratitude and appreciation. You know, taking initiative and being a good steward of our time and resources, acknowledging people's strengths and contributions. And then another, the last one, Jack, we just have four, it's willingness to learn, ensuring everyone has the skills needed to do their best, being a good teammate, and consistently following our procedures. So those are our core values that we came up with as a team.
Give me in one word right now so I can get a summary, because you gave me the word, then you defined them. I want to make sure I get it. So the one word values are?
Community, professionalism, gratitude, and willingness to learn.
Got it. Okay. So and then you define those further out, and you interview against those, and you ask questions against those. And that's the first filter by which you're now hiring people into your business that you've learned through these hard lessons, right?
Right. Yes.
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
as a team, we came up with those because those are important to us. And not to say that you're going to fall off occasionally, because we're not perfect.
Yeah.
I still fall off as hard as I try. But if it becomes too persistent, then, you know, that's what I've learned through traction. They're either in the wrong seat or they're not. You have to go through that work card, which I believe in that as well, going through the scorecard.
Yeah. So have you got through this process now? You've learned, so that's the lessons you've learned through this, right? This value alignment conversation. If you would have had that the first two times, it'd been a little more discerning in that process, slightly more deliberate, then maybe we would have, of course you would have never learned that without the pain, right?
Without the challenges. I feel like I learned so much going through those hard experiences. I don't want to go down that path again. The third time was a charm, though. Our service manager Sammy, he was right underneath our nose. He started with the company as a technician. Of all the people I've ever trained on service system, he's picked it up the quickest. He's got no formal education. He's just a great guy that loves to solve problems. He's great with people. And, you know, he truly cares not only about our core values, but about the company. And I can honestly say he's not a yes man. I can see him making decisions based on our core values.
Got it. Very cool.
Such a blessing having
him. Well, Bob, thank you for sharing this. But I want to ask you one more question. And we haven't prepared for this. And then we'll close her out here. But I have one more question to ask. So now we've got this recent situation. You know, we're still, by and large, in a quarantine situation here in this country. And, you know, it's 2 months into it now. About the middle of March is when things started to constrict and shut down. And now it's the middle of May. What have you learned?
What have I learned? Well, I'll tell you one thing I learned is everything I've learned through Nexstar has enabled me to, we're not thriving, I'll be honest, we're not thriving, but we're doing really well, okay? We're not, we're probably like 10% below where we need to be. So I feel that had I not been a part of Nexstar and learning everything that I've learned about leadership and everything that we do, the communication cadences that we talk about, you know, the one-on-one, the weekly level 10 meetings, the trainings. We went strictly to Zoom trainings. And although I struggled in the beginning, they are effective. We've got a great staff that's is in line with our values. And so what did I learn is just follow everything that we learned in Nexstar. Continue to do that. And you'll come out on top. That's what I've learned.
Wow. I didn't tee that up right, but I like the answer, Bob. So thank you for that. I want to, and as we kind of close out, Bob, I want to tell you that you're very involved in Nexstar. And when I talk to staff people here, they like Bob Hanifin. They like the way they're treated. They like dealing with you, Bob. So well done, man. That's kind of an insider's view of Nexstar here. I hear your name behind closed doors, and it's always in a good way. So well done, man. Well done. Hey. People like to hang around with you, though. So thank you, Bob, for your time today. I really appreciate it, man. Thank you. Busy, and you got a lot going on, and I appreciate your idea, and I'm glad you said I will. And thank you for sharing what you learned. I learned a lot. I sure appreciate it, Bob.
Thank you for having me today, Jack. And again, I want to say thank you to you, Nexstar. God bless you, and God bless America.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Well, thank you so much, Bob. And we'll catch you next time. And thank you all for listening to this very interesting, from the heart episode of Leadership Lounge. Jack Tester with Bob Hanifin, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks so much.